Hi, I'm Dan Cottrell, editor of Rugby Coach Weekly. You're about to jump into one of our podcasts. If you want to find out more about this podcast and also all of the great content, drills, activities, games and advice on the website, then go over to www.rugbycoachweekly.net. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
So this is slow initially because we really want to get that understanding before we go to that activity, because otherwise the activity will just be done through the motions. So we're trying to get the reason that we're about to do this activity so it helps us here, but we've got to get that clear in their heads.
Rugby Coach Weekly presents The Coaching Knife, where we cut to the root, cut out the fluff, and challenge the masters of their domain to cut to the chase. Hi, I hope you enjoyed the recording. This was made at the Wisconsin Youth Summit and we were out in the lobby, so there's a bit of background noise, but I hope you can hear clearly and it was certainly very enjoyable. Welcome to The Coaching Knife, when we cut to the root of the matter. In this episode, we speak to Nick Lear, General Manager at Six Degrees Sports. Focusing on coaching skills, we're going to cut to the root on where skills coaches often go wrong. Are you ready for the knife, Nick?
Yep.
Okay, what is skill?
Skill, you've got to be able to execute what you need to execute at whatever the situation presents.
What do you mean by execute?
Well, if I'm going to pass, I'll rephrase that. If I'm taking the ball to the line and the pitcher presents kick, pass or run, I've got to be able to do it and I've got to be able to get to it within one step.
So when you say taking the ball to the line, that gives me a picture that there is a line across the pitch that I've got to get to. But that's not actually the case, obviously, in rugby. So what does that mean?
Defensive line.
So they're assuming that they're moving forward.
Yeah.
Now, the skill is to do what with that pass?
The skill is to get the pass to where it needs to go. So often, particularly if you're first receiver, you won't have that knowledge of what's happening unless someone's giving you that. So, but if I can see in front of me that there might be an opportunity to run, I've got to be able to do that regardless of the fact I may have been called to pass.
Right. So what is the skill part of this? We're breaking down what it means. So the you have received the ball.
Yep. I've got to carry it in a certain way that allows for three options. Run, pass, kick.
Have you always got to have those three options?
Yep, I think so.
Okay. And therefore, you've got to carry the ball in two hands every single time?
100%.
So when you see players who are carrying the ball in one hand...
I hate it. And I'll give you an example. There's a fullback in Australia who catch the ball. Mm-hmm. The first thing he does, stuck it under here.
So he's stuck it under his arm, which looks a bit like a teddy bear.
Correct. Yeah.
And now, if I'm trying to run fast and I've got nobody in front of me, why would I want to pass?
Yeah. Well, if there's no one in front, there's no defensive line in front of you. So you've still got to be able to... And there are times, obviously, when you'll tuck it because you've got to run as fast as you can. Yeah. But you've also got to be able to get it back if you're coming to someone or if there's defence coming across. You've still got to have those options available.
So in a sense, we're not trying to talk specifically about passing skill, but the skill is being able to execute the pass. So have you got in your mind what that pass looks like? In your mind?
Yeah. There's a little bit of explanation in this.
Yeah.
Okay,
because... We hope.
Yeah, well, most people will teach the pass a certain way, okay? The problem with that is, and it's the way we run, is that you'll only pass every second step, which is when your inside foot's on the ground. Now, that's an issue if you're playing very close to the defensive line. Because what you'll do, you'll either pass early or you'll carry.
Right.
So what we teach a pass that's related to the strength in the forearms and wrists. So I can be doing anything with the lower body and I can still execute.
All right. So we're going to the specifics of a skill, which is great. And people are thinking, yeah, I need to work out my pass.
Yeah.
But a player has got to be able to perform that skill. Where are skills coaches going wrong? Are you saying that they haven't got the right picture or the right way to pass?
Yeah. If we just put a player into a drill or an activity, they will develop a way to pass, which will be fine at a certain level.
Yeah.
But as the levels get higher and as defences and decisions are required to be quicker, that way that we pass is no longer acceptable.
Right. So would you say you'd have to start at that initial stage when there's nobody in front of you and you're passing to a static target?
The way we do it... It can be a static target. We, and that's 6 degrees. So yeah. Mick Byrne as an example.
So just for the record, Mick Byrne, one of the top skills coaches in the world,
yeah.
Formerly with New Zealand. He's Australian, though, I think. Isn't
he is, yeah. He's an Australian AFL player.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He started as a kicking cup, so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, as an example, to develop that, the constraint we put in place is you put the ball on your outside hip.
When you say constraint, what do you mean by constraint?
Well, it's like a block which forces you to do a skill in a certain way.
Right, okay.
So, if we want to develop that, we place that on our hip,
yeah.
And then you can't recoil.
Right, okay.
So the only way I can get the ball to that person is I've got to use the muscles that we want to use in order to do that. Now, where skill coaches go, because you'll see that activity being executed. You see it on social media.
Okay, so just to be clear, that is a bona fide exercise that you would see at some stage in a skills. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not knocking that one out.
No, I'm not. But what we want to emphasise the fact that you can do that 100 times.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you pass. Because what happens in a game...
So it's not, as you say, it's not going to help you pass, so why bother doing it?
Because the way you do it, the way you structure it, and let's go to the last one with contextual interference,
you've
got to bring contextual interference in it. So when we talk contextual interference, we've got to then place that in the context of the game so that the game makes it clear to the person why they need to develop that skill.
Okay, I'm going to go back a couple of steps. So you've got a player who has played a bit of rugby before.
Yep.
You come along, you need to develop their skill.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you would start with them? I'm trying to work out. Would you start with them standing still with the ball in that position? So they'd be running.
Now, we'd put them into a situation which emphasises the importance. Okay, well, why couldn't you execute there? So we create that situation knowing that situation will if we make them aware of why they couldn't execute in that situation, we say, okay, we're going to go over here and do this activity
All right,
now.
So some people might call this whole part whole.
Yeah.
So this is maybe, give me an example of the first thing you would do with them. What would that look like to give them that, say, oh, just a moment, I need to work on this?
We'd play some sort of game, but we create the...
You can't say some sort of game, you have to tell me what that game could be.
Well, we do it in channels. So the attack has to stay in channels.
Yeah.
Defence can move anywhere. Okay, so if you go 4v3, and if they can't score, even though they've always got the numerical advantage, well, then we say, well, why aren't you scoring? So, I'm not fixing the defence.
So when you're saying that the attacker has got, say, like a 3 or 4 metre channel, they can't move out of that channel.
They've got to stay in it. Right. And if you really want to make it contextual, you make it a 1 metre channel.
Right, okay. So for the better players, you'd make it smaller and the weaker players.
Yep.
So they're playing this game.
Yeah.
Are you expecting failure?
Yes. And to a certain extent, I want to make the game hard enough. So that's where the constraints or the rules come in to make it hard enough that there is failure. And one thing I think where skills coaches do definitely go wrong is that you have to have failure to learn. And you've got to incorporate that in. And often people talk like 70-30, that you're 70 and 30 is failure. If you don't have that failure, then you're not going to recognise the need to learn.
Yeah, I mean... Learning is hard. You need to have struggles.
Yeah.
You need to find that sort of pressure point.
Yeah.
Now, just going back to that little game that you played.
Yeah.
If the attackers can't move the channels, where's the context of the game there? Because normally attackers can move sideways. I mean, sometimes our players run sideways.
Yes.
And that may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing, but that's for another day.
Yeah.
Wouldn't an attacker be saying, well, just a moment, but I can move sideways. If I'm faster than that, I can't step or go around them. So
the point of the game is to provide context again, is to why they need to be able to hold the defence.
Right.
Now, if the defenders can move easily and they can't, and because they've got such a narrow move, it over-highlights the fact that they've got to be passed very close to that opposition player in order to keep them there.
So the key is what you've done is you've created a constraint or a rule which is... It's far tougher than the game, and therefore it reveals that. Now, when it starts going wrong, what exactly happens next? What is the? How many times does it need to go wrong before you say stop all this?
Look, it's up to the coach,
and
you want it to be clear as to why things are occurring. So if it happens 3 or 4 times and the same thing happens, well then it becomes clearer to the player because the same thing happens. Well, why has it happened? Why do you think it's happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you would say stop, whistle, whatever,
we do it when they're in that, so just after it's happened.
Yeah.
We stop them and they're still in those positions.
Super quick feedback so they know what's going on. So
you
almost don't have to remind them where it's gone wrong. Mm. Now, it happens. You would give them feedback and let them carry on, or you would actually stop?
We would give them feedback. Well, there's a couple of ways. You can go feedback straight away, carry on and see if they can fix it. They won't.
Yeah.
Or you can go, come over here, guys. Yeah. We're going to do this activity. But we also highlight
So are you going to say what's gone wrong, and then you're going to come over, and you're going to say, stop, right, we're going to come over and do something?
Yes. Yeah.
So who does the highlighting?
The coach tries to get the highlighting out of them, okay? And if you can't, then you've got to be able to, you explicitly provide it to them.
Yeah, okay. So they come over, and between you, you've highlighted the problem. Are you using specific language, or are you just talking generally?
Depends what group you've got. If you've got specific language in and around your team,
you
use that specific language. But if it's a new group, for example, then the language hasn't been established yet.
Right, okay. Yeah. So that's quite important, because I think some coaches will jargonize straight away and they will be putting onto the game their own thoughts. So the key is to choose the language carefully.
100%.
Now, they now come in. What happens next?
So now they come in, and if it's the first session with a group, well, then that activity, well, before we go into that activity, what I usually do is, okay, guys, just watch this. We get one player just to run between two cones and just pass the ball back to me. And I say, just watch their feet and tell me if you notice something that's happening all the time. And some will say yes, you just point, watch their feet again. So this is just slow initially, because we really want to get that understanding before we go to that activity, because otherwise the activity will just be done through the motions. So we're trying to get the reason that we're about to do this activity so it helps us here, but we've got to get that clear in their heads. And what you'll find from that is they will always, if I'm passing right to left, I will always pass when my right foot's on the ground.
So, okay, we're going into the detail of the skill, but I'm thinking about how you're putting it. Now, a very wise coach maybe an hour ago mentioned a guy called Hattie.
Yes.
Now, why are you, the wise coach being you, of course, why are you using Hattie's methods here? Because this is the show part.
Yep.
So just quickly explain that.
Well, the reason why we use Hattie is because it's about visible learning, how to create visible learning. And visible learning is learning we can see. So, yep, okay, we know they've got that. So in order to do that, we've got to present the why. So the why may start in the game, and it's not always a set of rules. And that's where, as you get better at this type of coaching, and when you coach different groups, one set of rules for one group will be very different from another. You've got to establish what those rules are, or how the group processes information.
Right. So they've come in, and one of the visual part of the learning is, you've got the why perhaps from the exercise. Things have gone wrong in that game situation.
Yep.
You come over and you're doing showing them.
Yep.
And then they can. So if the player's doing it right all the time, which is going to happen.
Okay. Well, the reason I say this won't
is because
I only know.
Okay, so that might be possible, but it's perfectly possible that.
Oh, absolutely. In other skills, 100%. And look, the other thing with skills are as well, there's no one perfect way to do a skill. Okay, there's a realm of, as a bandwidth, that you've got to stay within. But the reality is physiology and anatomy will always determine. Yeah. And you've got to find out for that person how their anatomy will adapt. So where the actual skill comes in, and probably an example of this, if you get two people to do it, get them to pass the ball to each other, get them to an arm wrestle for 30 seconds, then get them to try and pass the ball again. Their body's changed.
Yeah.
So the ball will go everywhere. Mm. So the where we try to build robustness in skill is with, and this is where your contextual interference comes on, which was, I think it was one of your last
James
ones,
Barkley.
Where you can, is you've got to create different physiological states and then come back to something.
And in a very easy way to think about it is to create fatigue.
100%. Fatigue's the best way.
McBurn has said that generally there are variations, but most of the time, pass for most players will always look the same. So there is some variation. We've got to accept that.
Yeah.
But there are some key points. So if there are key points, and I don't want to necessarily go into the depth of the passes, you've got this player, you show them their passing maybe off a particular foot and that sort of thing. What happens next in the exercise? So you said, what do you notice? Then what happens?
So then we put the constraint or skill, but this is, when we're talking constraints before, we're talking tasks, which is game rules.
Yeah.
Now we need to create tasks for the body.
Yeah.
And we can do an environment. So an example, to get them to focus on passing with their elbows and wrists, I take the ability for them to counter move out of it. So we put it on their hip.
Yeah, so what you're saying is there's no back lift, you're just doing that. So you've created a situation where they are unable to do something to allow something else to happen. So they are doing that statically?
Yeah, initially. So they might do two or three of that. And then what we'll say is, okay, now do it while you're walking. But you've got to punch just before your inside foot hits the ground.
Right, okay.
Now we're going to do it before your outside foot.
That's very specific.
Yeah.
Now, you've just said earlier that everyone is different. But you're being very specific on that skill there.
No, no, not skill.
On the movement.
What I'm being, that movement itself is the constraint.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you're being very specific on the movement.
Yes, on the constraint.
Yeah.
But they've got to still pass. They've got to get the ball to that other person while their body's in a different position. So what the end point is still the same, but what I'm changing is the start point.
So what are we developing now with this template? We're not developing a skill, we're developing something else?
Well, no, we're developing a skill because we're developing their ability to pass without being dependent on their lower body.
Right, okay.
And then, and rather than doing 50 of one, we might do two lots of two or three from each side,
right.
But we're changing the start point every time.
So it's a bit of a sort of randomised practice. So
then we'll
without going too much into the detail, block practice would be you doing the same repetition.
Yeah.
Randomly, you'd be doing a skill, maybe skill A, skill B, skill C in a random one. You don't know what to expect.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so we've done that. What happens next? So
you go back to the game.
Go back to the game.
Yeah.
Now, would you expect an immediate improvement or not? Or what would you... In your own mind, in your experience, what would you see?
Well, it's interesting because we did this with a group of 11-year-olds, and you start to see a little bit of difference. You start to see the ball zip across a bit more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we start to challenge them, well, can you do that a bit closer to the opposition? And ironically, one of the coaches, when we did this one session, came and sent us a text saying, we saw improvement in one session. Now, we know it's not linear. So the next session...
So it's just very important to say because I think coaches think that they have a game, they'll go into a skill block or whatever you want to call it, go through those processes and nail those processes in whatever way. And you're not saying it's going to be perfect out of it.
No.
So I'm putting words into your mouth.
No, that's good.
And then they go back into the game situation. You're not always expecting it to be.
No, but what we look for and we highlight, even if there's minuscule improvement in terms of the fact that the ball might be zipping a bit quicker, as an example.
So that gives the player a bit of motivation. Something's happened. Okay. Now, you're a skills coach, you've got the players. This is not going to happen over an hour and a half.
No.
How long will this part? So we played this 4v3 in a channel. We've gone off and did a bit of a skills exercise to work out what's going to happen next. We go back to the game. Roughly what time is we looking here?
We're looking 3 to 4 minutes max for each. Yeah.
So it's a 15-minute block of work. Okay.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, how are you wrapping it up?
We wrap it up and we review. We then, again, try to elicit the information out of the players. And so where do you think you started? Where do you think you finished? So we do a genuine wrap-up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we think, when we come back to this in a week's time, how do you think we can start better? How do you think, what else do you think
we're, so we've done that and we come back in a week's time.
Yeah.
It would be a week or would it be longer?
Depends. Look, if you're talking two sessions a week, generally you do this type of activity maybe for 15 minutes, one session a week.
All right, okay.
Yeah. But if you're talking in greater environments.
So I've done, let's call this exercise one, game one.
Yeah.
So Tuesday I do it.
Yeah.
The next time I do that exercise.
More than likely next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, okay. And then when you do it, you're doing exactly the same?
Yep. Yeah, you'd start the game exactly the same, and just say.
Would you say anything about we've done this before, or would you expect
them? Yeah. Sorry, your first introduction is yes, we've done this last week,
right,
guys.
Okay.
Yep, we've done this last week. This is how we start. Okay, what we're looking for is,
yeah.
Or actually, question then. What do you think we're looking for?
Yeah.
Okay, and then so again, we're trying to get the information out of them, and then if we're seeing stuff that's improving, we might not be seeing. We're not going to see exactly what we want, but if we start to see, it's okay. Well, okay, guys, why do you think that was better, or if it was worse, why do you think it was worse?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to come back to this activity, okay, but this is what I want you to focus on. And one of the things we do with that is endpoint. So there's a few things, and even though...
So when we go back in, so we played the game, which looks pretty much exactly, so it's exactly the same as when we come back into the skill activity, will that be any different? Would it change at all, or will you do exactly the same as you did before?
Now, generally, because we call these habit change primers, so what we're looking for here, because we're putting a skills block in there, and it's we're trying to get the body to work out a way that it can get the ball there.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's certain things that are going to, if I'm using my elbows and my wrist properly, I'll just reverse a bit, but one of the things we see in catch pass, which can be affected massively, just in terms of a bit of anxiety, is the backhand will come up.
Yeah.
And the bottom hand will go down.
Yeah. All right, so sorry, I know we're going specifically into skills. It'd be lovely to talk about pass all the time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're running the exercise. It could be some other skill. Are you doing the same exercise as you did the previous
week. We are, but remember there's 3 or 4 or 5 different exercises in there.
Right.
And there's progressions from it. So just so they're a little bit better.
Okay, so your progression...
Could be, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
And then you go back into the game.
Now, remember something, the thing about fatigue, so a lot, if I go, gone youth, but just say I'm in a... Let's say I'm in a first 15 environment that we did this in the strength and conditioning because you would generally get physiological change.
Right, okay.
So if I do a bench press and then I've got to go to that punch pass activity, very different. Even though it's the same activity, my body's very different than it would have been before I did the bench press. So therefore, my body's got to work out how to adjust with a different body to get the same execution.
Okay, brilliant. So I can see how you can fit it in if you are a coach who is on your own. You would fit that in on a Tuesday session at a certain time. But if you're in maybe a more a high-performance environment, you would be working with your strength and conditioning guys.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Right. Cheers, Nick. That was excellent. Nick was academy manager at the Brumbies, but also assistant coach for the Australian team.
Seven years ago.
Yeah, a few years ago, but still pretty impressive. His philosophy is he's all about the individual test and then base the programs on what they need. And I think that came pretty clear from what we're talking about. If you want to get in contact with him, you can contact him at nick@6degreesports.com. So that's 6, S-I-X, degreesports.com. We're going to finish with 5 quickfire questions plus the bonus one. How old are you, Nick?
51.
What coaching book is by your bedside?
I don't have one at the moment.
Okay, well, that's fine. Not everyone has a coaching book by the bedside. Maybe a hot cup of cocoa. which coach teacher are you loving at the moment?
Look, Mick's my business partner.
Yeah.
And every time I speak with Mick, I learn things.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to do a diagnostic interview with Wayne Smith a number of years ago.
Yeah.
And I'd had done with a number of guys at the Crusaders organisation.
Yeah.
But the one guy that tied it all together, Wayne Smith.
Okay, he often comes up and a pretty key figure in rugby coaching. Which team sports subject would you love to coach at the moment? Obviously, you're coaching rugby, but is there something else?
Look, I've sort of transitioned out of coach, even though I coached this year, it was more of a case study. The role I've gone into at the school is more coach development, more trying to teach coaches how to do this type
of coaching.
Yeah.
Who's inspired you most?
I've had it. Is that mentor you're talking about, or
just someone you say? Well, anybody. Just one person.
It was probably a couple. I'd say. Early McClear, Laurie Fisher.
Yeah. Okay.
Taught me a lot. Then Mick, definitely.
Yeah.
And they're probably the main ones in terms of coaching.
Okay. And Laurie Fisher, big on Instagram for anyone who wants to see his exercises. Excellent to watch. Okay. What would you tell your 20-year-old self to do more of?
Shut up.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you haven't shut up there, Nick. That's been brilliant. Thanks very much for your time and really enjoyed that.
Oh, good. Cheers, mate. Thank you.